One of these men is one of Melbourne's brightest newsbreakers.
Truly was the last chance for Melburnians to break out a dance move.
The other is a five-star jerk.
I just don't want to get embroiled in his Twitter spat.
Across Melbourne, this is Breakfast with Seb Costello and Lawrence Mooney on Triple M.
Triple M rocks Melbourne.
Now, Moonman, don't look at me like that. There's a reason why we're playing this.
Why are we playing the Bee Gees first thing on a Tuesday morning, Seb Costello?
Because a Bee Gee leaving Prince's Park looms as a footballing tragedy for Carlton.
I see what you're doing
Can
there.
Can you believe Bryce Gibbs wants out with 3 years to go on a contract?
I tell you what, there was a sniff of it on yesterday's show. We spoke to Damo, and he suggested that there was something going on that was coming out of the Gibbs camp, and then it broke. What I think is a tragedy is that the Herald Sun have passed up a trade period opportunity of superimposing the Guernsey of the new club onto Bryce Gibbs. I wanted to see him in the Adelaide Guernsey there, but no, he's still in the Carlton jumper.
Has it moved into superimposed jumper territory yet? Because here's where we
really
stand. Well, Bryce
when
Gibbs,
does that happen? Yeah, when's the tipping point?
When is the threshold? It's not a bad question to ask the audience. But Bryce Gibbs, okay, number one draft pick. Former Carlton best and fairest winner, unbeknownst to the Blues, has talks with Adelaide in the past week, goes up to Byron Bay, meets with Tex Walker, where an Adelaide player is having a wedding. They have a little coffee down there. And then Monday comes around and the Adelaide Crows go public by saying, we are interested in Bryce Gibbs and Bryce Gibbs is interested in us. Andrew McKay, of course, the Carlton boss down there at Prince's Park, he does a press conference himself where he says, we've been blindsided by this and we'll be working in every way we can to keep Bryce Gibbs at Carlton.
Can I get a little bit of legal advice from you, Seb?
What
go about
for it.
The 3 years remaining on his contract?
Yep.
What? So does this mean now the contracts are out the window, that they not worth the paper they're written on because they're just, you know, completely negotiable?
It would effectively look that way, where Bryce Gibbs has said to himself, yeah, 2 years ago I signed a deal saying I'd be here for five, but I've changed my mind.
Are we into the brave new world of American sport here?
There's a bit of that.
Where it's constant free agency, and not only that, well, it may evolve to players being traded just beyond mid-season, you know, like any time.
I want to know how Carlton supporters feel this morning.
Well, I can tell you how they feel.
Yep.
Our producer, Sarah Fayor, is one.
Yes,
and
she is.
She's gutted.
Yep.
And she was not happy with your selection of tragedy by the Bee Gees.
For a lot
at
of
the
reasons,
top of the show.
Let's be honest. Johnny at Northcote, what do you think?
Morning, fellas.
Morning.
It's like my old soccer coach used to say. He said to me, we've tried you in every position, but in the end, we're just going to have to pull you off. Mate, I will go and pack his bags and drive him to Adelaide.
Really?
Number one, yeah, absolutely. We'll get a first-round pick and rebuild. We're no good anyway, so it doesn't matter.
But pretty quality player to be letting go. You must be disappointed, John.
Disappointed in the time that he's had at the club and what we've been able to achieve for a number one pick. So time to cut the ties and let's get something new.
I like it. Thanks for the call, Johnny. You never forget the advice of some of your early sporting coaches, do you? Especially if it was sort of a little negative. Let's go to Dino at Pascoe Vale. Dino, what do you reckon?
Yeah, I think we don't need any negativity at the club. So if he wants to go, let him go. But the other call is to get other players for him. We're trying to build a good team. And
thanks, Dino.
Been good.
I think you've got us in the toilet there, Dino. We can't properly hear you, but thanks. And Apsy from Seddon, you're a Blues fan?
Yeah, mate, big Blues fan. I am actually copying a wallop of messages yesterday from the boys getting into me about Bryce Gibbs leaving because I absolutely love the bloke, so I'm absolutely heartbroken he's leaving us.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
It seemed like, Apsy, you were just about to get the return too. I mean, he's starting to show some of his best form of his career. He's moving into his, you know, years where he is an experienced, developed number one draft pick. Does that make it harder?
Yeah, definitely. I think personally he's been one of the better swingmans in the competitions for a long time. But, yeah, I suppose once you nail a spot, you've got to sort of keep it. And like you said, he's pretty much almost got to the axe. The exact elite level that he should be at as a number one draft pick.
Thanks for your call, Apsy.
And Carla going through an interesting time, you know, because Murphy and Cruiser, they've been there for a while and now Gibbs is leaving. Are they going through another rebuild, Carlton?
First round draft picks break your heart, don't they? Because they either don't perform or they want to go, and, you know.
I'm full of trepidation when it comes to first round draft picks. Yeah. It's like, you know, Essendon's got the first round draft picks. It's like, really? There's been some doozies.
Give us something reliable like 71. I think James Hurd was in the 70s.
Yeah.
From memory.
I thought he came kind of like familial ties.
Yeah, although there's a bit of that, of course, too. A councillor out in Wyndham, Intaj Khan is his name, has a vision.
So Wyndham includes Werribee, Hoppers Crossing.
Out in the western suburbs, mm-hmm. Moonman. And he says that he wants
there,
to turn a little... No, it's great. He wants to turn a little piece of beach down there called Campbell's Cove mm-hmm. into the next Gold Coast.
Now, Campbell's Cove is very interesting. Mm-hmm. It, South Werribee or kind of Point Cookish. It's quite picturesque because it's got all these boat sheds down there. So they're painted up like the bathing boxes of Brighton. And I think it was also used as a set for Sea Change.
Oh, really?
I think a bit of Sea Change was shot
Campbell's
down there.
Cove was Pearl Bay. Cove.
Yeah, so it's got some...
It's got heritage.
It's got heritage listing.
You can see this. This is sort of the Bob Jelly-esque character of Wyndham wanting to bring the developers in and build some big towers down there.
There's a couple of things that... you know, the Wyndham Shire and particularly Campbell Cove don't have that the Gold Coast has.
Yes.
Weather. Weather is vital.
Yes.
And
it's a little bit different.
So if you
want
to start imitating it, like, well, you know, where do you start? Meter maids? Is that a thing that can never be visited again? Dressing women up in bikinis and get them to put coins in parking meters?
The Werribee meter maids. Well, the council is going to have to find a way to pay for this development somehow. So maybe well-enforced parking meters is how he's going to raise his revenue.
Your Cavill Avenue and your Orchid Street.
Which one's Orchid Street?
I think it's just off Cavill Avenue. It's like they abut one another.
Right.
And, you know, is it going to be a shopping precinct? Casino?
Yes.
Is it, you know, are we going to see schoolies going down there?
If he wants to do this, you know who he really needs? Warwick Capper.
Yeah, that's
to get down there to Werribee and lead the development.
I say dream on. Don't let other people stand on your dreams.
Yeah, fair enough. I want someone from down there just describe whether it's possible, Campbell's Cove.
I remember as a kid, I grew up in Bayswater out in the eastern suburbs, and a councillor out there suggested that Bayswater changes its name to Paris and becomes a shopping precinct. It was the truth. They tried to rename it Paris.
Really?
Yeah. And people just went, that cannot work.
I like when people remodel. They did it at Rosebud West. Actually, I don't know if it ended up going through, but last year we discussed how the residents of Rosebud West wanted to turn it Capel Sound.
Right.
Yeah. Capel Sound, because I think that was its original name or something like that, and they wanted to give the area a bit more esteem.
Yeah, that has a nice bit of a sound rather than just a beach. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, a bit of remodelling. You've got, as you know, being in showbiz, Seb, you know, you'll eventually just become Seb. Mm. You'll drop the Costello.
Right.
Yeah, so that's, you know, you get that kind of image. You'll have to go to the Logies dressed in meat, emerge from an egg.
Oh, I don't know if they make meat dresses in my size. I'm afraid to say, Moonman. I think also, was there a bit of a change where parts of Chadstone became Malvern East?
Ooh, because Brighton now stretches from Elwood to Moorabbin, doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, doesn't it do something to property prices, they say, if you can, you know, change the name of it and make it sound a little bit more swish?
And I think it reduces your insurance premium too if it, you know, you're not living in Rosebud West, but Capel Sound.
Well, this guy, Intaj Khan, he's 44, he's a councillor in Wyndham, and he also wants to include in this vision to turn Campbell's Cove near Werribee into the new Gold Coast. He includes the arrival of a major theme park such as Disneyland.
Yeah, well, that's what you're talking about. But what airport do you get off at? Mm. Do you get off at Avalon or Tulla for
the glitzy Campbell's
Strip?
I reckon we send them through Avalon. Yeah. Get a bit more traffic through there. Send them to the Avalon Roadhouse on the way through.
We're laughing now, but that area is becoming hugely populated, and development of that nature.
Better public transport out there now too.
Isn't insane. Hype's over here. He's got something to say.
I just got a couple of tweets coming through. MMM Hot Breakfast. Campbell Cove is apparently the local nudist beach. Could make things interesting.
Is that right?
That's a hardy nudist that gets down there in the height of winter.
So, do you think this councillor is familiar with the beach, man?
Oh, okay. Ooh, the Gold Coast, yeah.
I know.
We're not casting aspersions on the council.
I have no idea, but you need vision. Moon Man, when you're a counsellor, you need to, you know, you need to reveal big ideas. And would you have to change the nudist laws to make it a Gold Coast sort of space?
Hot people don't go to nudist beach, do they?
You're speaking from experience here?
Yeah, I've been.
Have you?
No, I've never been to a nudist beach.
I don't believe you in the slightest. You want to bring some nudity into the studio later in the day.
No, I don't.
You do. Lawrence Mooney's embarrassing bodies. It's written on my run sheet here.
It's body. My body. Let's move on.
Oh, dear. Yesterday, the eyes of Australia's sporting world turned the inquest into the death of cricketer Phil Hughes. In that inquest is a very experienced journalist for the Nine Network, Damien Ryan. Thanks for joining us and good morning.
Yes, good morning to you.
Damo, the moment that everybody's focusing on is the examination of fast bowler Doug Bollinger and what he may or may not have said out on the pitch. Can you tell us how that discussion actually came about? What was he being asked?
Well, it got pretty ugly, really, because it all came down to Phil Hughes' brother, Jason, who heard of certain sledging a couple of days after the actual incident. And that was dredged up yesterday. And obviously, Jason Hughes actually played a bit of cricket himself, and he knew some of the cricketers, obviously some of the South Australian players as well. And the quote basically was, "I'm going to kill you," and that was from Dougie Bollinger. Of course he didn't mean it. If he did say it, he can't recall saying it. And at one point in the inquiry he said, "I know in my heart I didn't say it." But when he was pressed further, he said, "Look, it could have happened. I don't recall." So sledging has become a key to this whole inquest. I mean, we know how Phil Hughes died. I mean, the inquiry right from the outset said it was inevitable that he was going to die from that ball. It wouldn't matter what helmet he had on. It struck him in an unbelievable position. It was freakish.
Yep.
And I think we've heard it before. Basically, you know, it was really tough for Brad Haddin yesterday also. He was like, 2 metres away when the ball hit him. He said he'd never seen anything like it. You know, he saw his mate. He heard a groan, which was, he'd never heard something like that before. And then he basically collapsed and didn't try and break his fall. He knew something, you know, terrible had happened. And that was the matter. Brad Haddin said he didn't instruct anyone to bowl short balls. So the intricacies of the game are really being looked at here.
And what possible part can, you know, bring up the sledging play in that when they talk about the tragic inevitability of that freakish ball, even the delay in the ambulance getting to the ground and collecting Phil Hughes, they said that, you know, his death was an inevitability. What possible part can the sledging play?
I don't know. And obviously the family, it's difficult to say, but the family have clearly drawn a line in the sand here.
Yep.
You know, they're friends with all these cricketers, but it was hard not to see pot shots being taken yesterday. Mm. It got pretty ugly. To think that the family are accusing Brad Haddin, the captain, of targeting their son to bowl short. Brad Haddin said he didn't do that. It'll be interesting today. Dave Warner might be in the video link today, where he's obviously over in South Africa getting caned by the South Africans. But he has stated in a written statement, look, he couldn't recall the sledging, but Dave Warner will say in that statement, when he probably said in the same evidence, that he can recall a bowling strategy was made to put Phil Hughes on the back foot, because Phil Hughes on that day was in form. He was singing like watermelons, really. He was 63 not out and wanted to be back in the test team.
Damo, from the outside, it looks like an incredibly unfair line of questioning to Doug Bollinger. What effect was it having on him? How was he in the inquest?
I think he knew it was coming.
Okay.
But, to say something like that, you know, 2 years on and to be in a court of law, I mean, Doug Bollinger, you know, he's a feisty old chap, you know, and he's a great fella. He's very popular. There's no doubt about that. Dougie is very, very popular, and he was put in a very dark spot. What goes on the field? Yeah, look, Australian cricket is renowned for its sledging, but so are the Poms. They give as good as we get, and you know, and maybe they might look at things, you know, when they go out to play and a bowler says to an opening bat, you know, he mightn't say some of the things he probably used to say.
But yeah, but nobody's going to take a sporting expression like "I'm going to kill you" literally, and it shouldn't be, and it shouldn't be taken that way because it's divisive stuff. I think.
You'd hope not. Hey, Damo, thank you for bringing us up to speed with the inquest. We will no doubt be watching your reports over the coming days on the Nine Network.
Good on you, boys. Thank you very much.
It is now time for Lawrence Mooney to reveal a body part he's embarrassed of, which he refers to as Lawrence Mooney's embarrassing bodies.
There's the all too familiar theme music from Embarrassing Bodies,
which makes me very nervous.
Well, I don't know where to start.
What is it? Is it upper body?
It's skin related, and back in May, I started to develop lesions. Whenever you use a medical term, you know, like sores, scabs, raised areas,
there are
a bit of a rash.
There are inflamed craters on the moon.
Yes. Now, the worst thing that
lesions.
I did, I've got okay. Can you write lesions down?
Lesions.
So, the worst thing I did, and the first thing I did, was go to the internet, and I described to the internet what was growing on my skin, and they said you've either got HIV sarcoma, you've got lymphoma, or you've got a bit of eczema. And
gee, or, which option would you
get? Or fungus. Now, you don't want a fungal growth on your skin. So, anyway, I'm going to reveal it to you. I'm going to reveal one.
All right. So, you're about to show us one that is particularly bad.
On the back of my bicep here.
He's pointing to his arm. Oh, and he's pulled back the sleeve. Oh goodness! I've never said I've wanted to move to Adelaide, but a power outage would be great right now to hide that red mark.
So it's a large red disc. Now that's okay for a week or so, but I've applied.
Looks a little angry.
It's angry, and there's a couple around my pec as well, and under my arm.
Around your what?
My pec. My pectoral.
Oh, pectoral.
Yeah.
Goodness me.
Around, wow. Hey, that's very unfamiliar, you know, like around my pec.
Well, anyway, I thought it was going further.
The first time I got diagnosed, I went to a chemist in Italy, and the guy said, whip your shirt off. And then he saw it and he started shaking his hands and doing this. Ooh. And went and got me a cream. That didn't work. Returned to Australia. And the sad thing about it is having to look at it every day and it won't go away. And so I went to the doctor yesterday. I was exasperated. I said, what is this? So he said, it's discoid eczema.
Discoid eczema.
He said, the best way to get rid of it is swim in salt water or get outside, get some sun and fresh air. Okay, so get your shirt off outside. And I said, so what causes it? And here's the hurtful thing. He said, it's just aging. I said, so what? He goes, you know, the expression crusty old men, that's what happens. Their skin just starts cracking up and you get a bit of discoid eczema here, there and everywhere and you just become crusty. I said, so is this forever? And he said, possibly not if you get outside and get into the swim. So down to the Bondi the Brighton Icebergs for me.
You and Ted Bailey are going to be down there in the cold salt water.
That's what I've got to do. I'm getting crusty.
Show it to me again.
My arm?
Your pec. Okay. Yeah, no, okay, so there it is.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Look at it.
Oh, there's another one. Yeah. As you pull the sleeve back, how many have you got?
Well, there's probably five or six.
Oh, that one looks like some of the angry clown sightings we've seen around Melbourne over the last few days.
The big red nose. Oh. But can you understand how I'm ashamed? I don't want to look at myself in the mirror. It's horrible. And now I know what it's like to be you.
That's it. Can we put a photo of Lawrence Mooney's embarrassing bodies on social media?
Really? Okay. I'll share with people. Maybe I'm saying to people out there, you know, there might be men or women out there listening who have gone through the same shame that I have. And now they can identify.
No, we're not doing that.
They're not alone.
We're not doing tweet us your embarrassing body pics. No.
Yes.
No.
Why not? Put your embarrassing body or your lesion or your discoid eczema, and send it to us. Tweet it to us.
No, good.
Free
thing
yourself.
Good thing you don't know the
Rise
Twitter handle.
Your shame.
You don't know the Twitter handle, so that's good. They can't send
MMM
us those
breakfast.
Photos.
At Triple M Breakfast.
Who told you the Twitter handle?
I've got the Twitter handle.
Oh, gosh. Put your shirt back on.
Okay.
And yesterday, the US presidential debate took place. It was Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton. And it was difficult to keep in mind that this was actually a contest between two people who want to be leaders of the Western world, especially with moments like this.
It's just awfully good that someone with the temperament of Donald Trump is not in charge of the law in our country.
Yeah, because you'd be in jail.
Secretary Clinton.
And his little asides like that were probably his strongest suit in the debate, Donald Trump. They were both actually quite underwhelming in that statesman kind of a way. They didn't seem like natural leaders. It was a bit of a scrap. But that was the only time when the audience broke into spontaneous yells and applause and laughter. So I don't think they were really right behind Hillary either, that St. Louis audience.
Well, let's see what they're saying over there in the United States with the US Bureau correspondent from the Nine Network. Morning, Laura Turner.
Good morning, Seb. Good morning, Lawrence.
What has the morning, reaction Laura. Been? Have we? Who won that?
Well, look, I think the jury's still out on who won in terms of the undecideds and the voters. Certainly, a lot of the commentary we've been listening to today has said that Donald Trump did far better than expected. He, stemmed the blood flow that he suffered from across the weekend with those revelations about that tape 11 years ago. But certainly on substance, a lot of the commentary is that Hillary Clinton won and was expected to win. You just can't, she's so experienced, you can't really expect her to lose on policy detail and that sort of thing. But, Donald Trump did do better than expected.
Donald Trump seems to play the victim line a lot too, like the moderators and Hillary were all persecuting him and the whole world's against him. Is this a ploy that he's had the whole time?
First debate as well, but last night it was a hand, really. I mean, he nearly picked a fight with both the moderators at one point, yelling over the top of them, this isn't fair, it's three against one, you give her more time than me, kind of almost stamping his feet like a child. It was quite incredible to watch, and just being in the media room, there were hundreds of journalists in there with us, and a lot of them spent, and a lot of these people are well-versed in US politics, cover them, all of these campaigns were shaking their heads, just couldn't believe what they were seeing. And this is after a year and a half of it.
And Turns, I'm sure nothing surprises you on this election campaign so far, but tell us about what Donald Trump did before the debate in that Facebook video.
Are you talking about the press conference
with
those women?
Yeah.
Well, that was... He had hinted in his first pseudo apology for that 11-year-old tape that came out that he was going to bring up Bill Clinton's past indiscretions. And everyone was kind of thinking, is he going to do it, isn't he? Because he sort of threatened that before. Then about an hour or 2 hours before the debate, this surprise press conference, he's got four women with him, three of which accused Bill Clinton of sexual misconduct in the past. One woman who was raped and accuses Hillary Clinton of mistreating her. Hillary Clinton was the defense lawyer for her, this woman's accused. So they're all Clinton accusers. Donald Trump sits there in this photo op with them and does a mini press conference. And then, get this, the story that's come out this morning is that his campaign was actually going to put those four women in the front row, in the box where his family actually sits, right on the same level up the front as where the Clintons were sitting.
Bizarre.
To intimidate her. And it was literally two minutes before that national broadcast happened that plan got pulled because, the people in charge there said, this is not happening, that is not the way it works, and the women got put further back in the audience. But they were willing to go that down and dirty to try and intimidate Hillary Clinton and change the national conversation about Donald Trump, shift it to Bill Clinton. That is how far they were willing to go.
None of this is
extraordinary.
Befitting the top office in the world, the commander-in-chief, the leader of the Western world.
Right.
And so is there this kind of sense of disappointment in America that they have, not a lot to aspire to?
Absolutely. And today, the Republican in the US, House Speaker Paul Ryan, has come out and said, I cannot defend this man anymore. I will not be going out and campaigning with him. And he's told all of the other Republicans down the ticket, you do now what what is best for you, for your political future. And if you want to take away your support for this man, go ahead and do it.
We live in staggering times watching this campaign unfold. Yeah. You've been all over it, Laura Turner, and we appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, guys.
This is an extraordinary set of circumstances that came about at the grand final. Rob McCarthy was raised by his old man who was a Yarraville boy and so became a Western Bulldog. Mm-hmm. He managed to get some tickets to the game and sat there watching his beloved Bulldogs as they ran out against the Sydney Swans. 10 minutes before this final siren, he collapsed, went into cardiac arrest, and what happened next is a really heartwarming story and a tribute to Ambulance Victoria and the first aiders at the MCG. Morning, Rob.
Morning, Seb.
Now, Rob McCarthy, what was your last memory or your final memory of that game before you went into cardiac arrest?
I think we were 2 points up.
Mm-hmm.
And then the heart was obviously pumping harder.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I was probably going to have the heart attack in maybe a week or 2 weeks down the track.
Okay.
But the excitement of the football brought it on. So.
Was it a turnover or an umpire's decision or a spectacular mark?
What
put you over the edge?
It was probably the culmination of everything, but it was, yes, I just remember looking at the score and seeing, I think it was 2 points up, but, and that's honestly all I remember, so had I passed away, it would have been painless, but...
you would have been straight into the big bulldog in the sky. Yeah. Did you see the white light? Did you cross over, Rob?
No, because I was only clinically dead, I wasn't literally dead, like my brain was still okay. Active, so...
You're still here.
And one of the most extraordinary things, Rob, I found, we had a chat yesterday down there at the Epworth, and you were sitting with a couple of officials from the AFL, and earlier in the day you turned to one of them, and what did you say?
I said, it was Gemma who was her name, because she just introduced herself, and I said, and this is getting exciting, because it's been exciting, you know, it's probably one of the best grand finals for years, and...
Mm.
So I said to her, I hope they have an ambulance parked at the front, because I reckon I'm going to have a heart attack.
It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, Rob.
It wasn't. It was very prophetic, yeah.
So, I mean, what a week. Not only does your club win its first premiership in 62 years, you have a brush with death and you come through. It couldn't get much better than that, could it?
No.
And not only that, mate, you've had a great couple of weeks because I know your daughter got married recently, so the Doggies have won a premiership, so it's all happiness. But yesterday we got the full story that when you collapsed, sitting a couple of seats away was an Ambulance Victoria paramedic who had taken the day off to watch the game and was supporting the Sydney Swans. When you collapsed, somebody nudged him on the shoulder. He sprang into action and started working on you. Yesterday, you got to meet him. What was it like to shake the hand of the man who saved your life?
It's phenomenal. I don't know. Words can't explain. It's too hard to explain. But, wonderful. And he's only 24. And I think if you remember the ambulance bloke, one of the other ambulance blokes, John, yeah, Connell, was talking about how he'd done it, he was doing it perfectly.
Right.
So,
which is...
this young man as a paramedic was doing the job properly. But the thing was that, you know, like I said to him, I'm sorry I upset you, that's why I upset your day, but that's why you didn't have to go and fracture my sternum. That wasn't very nice.
Hey, Rob, before we let you go, just because you were obviously, knocking on heaven's door for the last 10 minutes of the grand final, just have a listen to this.
Releases the ball back to Dixon. In fact, it's McLean. He's absolutely decapitated in the pocket.
Oh, beautiful call, JB. What about Pickett? He just doesn't get beat one-on-one. Pickett does not get beat one-on-one.
This to make it four in a row and absolutely ice the game with 20 seconds left.
He can milk the clock.
Yeah,
he doesn't have to kick it. Come on, mate.
I can't do it justice, mate.
Yes,
I can't.
You can.
Take over, Duke.
Just Duke, it's you.
62 years.
Call it.
And I can't
go on, McLean. Come on, Darcy.
Toby McLean, set shot, misses, does not matter. There it is.
There it is.
History made at the MCG. This unbelievable Western Bulldogs outfit. 55 years out of the big dance. 62 years since they've won a premiership. They've achieved all that and more in one of the great finals campaigns the game has ever seen.
Just in case you hadn't heard it, how does that sound?
You're trying to torture me. The amazing thing, though, about the whole thing was that up to the grand final, I'm the caretaker of Retirement Village in Baxley, Peninsula Lifestyle Retirement Village. We've got a 17-seat theatreette. And the residents, some of the residents, it's brand new, and a few of the residents were there watching it, and some Doggy supporters.
Mm.
And And I can't do it. I couldn't go. I came down the last minute when I knew we'd won each game. So I actually physically didn't go and watch them win any of the games they won. Yeah, I watched the replays.
There must be some sense memory there.
I had a go and I had a heart attack. So.
Yeah. Rob, health message, change of lifestyle. What are we doing?
Walking? No. Unfortunately, my heart attacks were genetic.
Oh, right. Okay.
Purely genetic.
There's nothing you can do about that then.
No. So that's
see your parents.
Show you why we talked about just about defibrillators and getting your heart checked. So you can be as fit as a fiddle, but if you've got heart disease in the family, get yourself checked. Because look at me. I'm a prime example of why you have to. So I've got to look at reasons why I've had it, and I've got to look at ways. I might have to get a defibrillator and certain.
That's it.
Well, before you go back to the footy, definitely.
Anyway, I'm live and kicking. That's the main thing.
Yeah, mate, no, we're really pleased. Rob McCarthy, the man who survived a heart attack at the MCG on grand final day. I know he's now become a big campaigner to get defibs into sporting clubs and organisations around the country. Thanks for your time, Rob.
Pleasure.
Yesterday, Damien Barrett brought the news to us first that Bryce Gibbs was looking at a possible trade to Adelaide.
And now you've whet our appetite, Damo, so what else have you got for us from trade week? Come on, another scoop, please.
How are you, boys? Look, it's going to require a fair bit of manoeuvring now to actually have this happen. The pick 13 that Adelaide Crows has got possession of is clearly the starting point to whatever happens there with Gibbs, but Carlton, you know, Carlton will fight for this one, and they'll do so on the back of the fact he's got 3 years still remaining of a contract to run. It's for the club to say yesterday that they were totally shocked. I mean, it's not quite an accurate representation as far as I read it. They certainly got wind of it last week as a potential situation with Gibbs wanting to officially seek out. And I, again, hear this after the event that the Adelaide Crows players were seriously pitching to Gibbs himself during the course of the year, particularly late in that year. And even the grand final week, and particularly the Brownlow Medal night, they were actively courting him and telling him that that's where he should be. So things have moved, and there are personal reasons, which you know we're not going to go into, and they're not dramatic personal reasons, but there are personal reasons attached to Bryce Gibbs wanting to continue his AFL career in Adelaide.
Have to be pretty emotional to have to move back to South Australia.
You mentioned that
need a real good reason.
You mentioned
his mum
the Blues,
must be quite crook.
You mentioned that the Blues weren't happy with the Adelaide Crows. Let's have a listen to what Andrew McKay, the footy leader down there at Carlton, had to say yesterday.
Bryce spoke to us and mentioned that he'd like to get back to Adelaide for family reasons. We think we can work with him through those issues. So we're not drawing any conclusions just yet.
We were notified a number of days ago. Certainly Adelaide notifying the media this morning caught us a little bit by surprise. We haven't heard from those guys at this stage. I think it would have been more important to work through the issues with Bryce first. Obviously a lot of factors here, so we want to work through the issues with Bryce and we'll see what comes out of it.
The word for me here is contract, Damo.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, what does a contract mean if he can just walk away from it?
Yeah, it's what's happening though now, Lawrence. I mean, even Deledio, who does have a 1 year remaining of a contract at Richmond, it's the players have got all the power now in these deals. It's gone from the meat market that it still is to a point, but I think it's gone too far now to the total players' control. You look at situations where first and even second year players are nominating footy clubs under contract, and there won't be a change on that, I don't see, in the near future. But it's another way the clubs work, and it's now gone too far. And as such, this will be pulled back.
Changing times in footy. Damien Barrett brings us up to speed. Thanks for your time, Damo.
Thanks, guys.
Lawrence's family has gone away.
I've made my family disappear.
This is Moon Man's Home Alone Tales.
Postcards, I won't you send me?
That's what I'm doing while my wife and child are away. I'm going back through the whole Postcards back catalogue. Yesterday, I thought I'm going to cook for myself last night. And
how are you like in the kitchen?
I am pretty good in the kitchen. But I thought
pastas or sort of big cuts of meat? What's your special dish?
I'm a great roaster.
Yeah.
I love roast vegetables and big, you know, a chicken or a leg of lamb, and I like to bring it all together.
I'd watch a Lawrence Mooney cooking show.
Oh, would you? Mm. Yeah, just slaughtering a bottle of Beaujolais.
as you go. One for me, one for the pasta.
So I went down to the butcher shop, and I bought myself an expensive T-bone. last night.
What are we talking expensive, T-Bone? What's the...
$29 a kilo.
Ooh, okay, yeah. So yeah. You've decided to treat yourself a bit there.
Mm, absolutely.
Was this inspired by Australia's new beef queen, Gina Rinehart, buying the big cattle property?
You absolutely nailed it. I just thought, I'm going to honour the beef queen, and I'm going to go home tonight, and I'm going to beef it big time.
I'm going to sink my teeth into some beef.
Now, I also made a side salad. Ingredients?
Lettuce.
Yes.
Tomato.
And that is all. Now, a lot of people go, that's classically blokey. You've just gone, you know, steak and lettuce and tomato. But the lettuce and tomato salad is greatly underestimated. And you garnish it with some, you know, rock salt and chili and a little bit of olive oil. That is perfect.
I'm reminded, Moon Man.
I am happy in front of the TV all night long.
The last time we were together on radio, we celebrated the end of it with a lunch at the iconic Melbourne restaurant Vlado's, and their salad is just shredded lettuce and a couple of slices of tomato on
top.
Yes,
some refer to that fateful day as Black Wednesday.
Why would they refer to it like that?
Because things spiraled out of control, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about me being home alone. Two words for you,
yes,
Seb Costello. Period. Well, three word.
What?
Period of adjustment. I went through the door last night. I'm not missing them now. They've been gone a week. And I got home. The dog was there. Rupert, glad to see me. And we hunkered down. And I'm happier. I'm a single man now.
Hang on.
I don't know whether I'm going to open the door to them when they get home. I've gone through the grieving stage.
So
and I'm on to, you know, steak and salad in front of the TV on my own. What's more? The bed's all mine. The bed is all mine.
Are you a side sleeper?
I am now. I'm a diagonal.
You're going crossways.
I'm north by northwest now.
What sort of breed is Rupert?
Rupert is a Labradoodle crossed with a Spoodle, and he's a great bed companion too because he just gets down the end, stays out of the way, and, yep, period of adjustment.
You and Rupert are making a fresh start.
Yeah. Two neutered men living together.
The stories you'll read about.
The stories you'll talk about.
The stories you'll watch.
Start here.
On Triple M's Hot Breakfast. This is The Rule World. That was when I ruled the world. With Andrew Rule.
Ruler is here, the associate editor of the Herald Sun. Ruler, we read yesterday about a name that we hadn't heard for quite a while. It was Harry Barkas, who is known to some as the hot chocolate rapist.
He was.
Why did he earn that name?
I would call him, you know, Harry Barking Mad and Bad, because he was no good.
What did he do?
And he's gone to a better place.
Yeah, well,
which
good.
Is better for us. Mm. He did, what he used to do was go to your discotheques, your nightclubs, and he would, or other places, bars, and he would try to pick up women. And if he found one that was drunk enough to agree to accept a lift from him, he'd say, oh, look, I'll just pop in to the 7-Eleven or whatever and buy a hot chocolate or a coffee or whatever. And then they go, oh, okay. And he'd buy this and he'd spike it with a Mickey Finn with a drug, Rohypnol or other things, and drug them and rape them. This was, the police think he was a serial offender for a long time, and he eventually was caught and locked up. And much to our relief and pleasure this week, we found out that he died in jail.
I read yesterday that he died at the age of 54. Do we know how he died?
Well, I have inside information, Seb.
I like
that he died, that he wasn't really a king in any sense, but he
as died sexual on the predators are not kings.
No, he died on the throne.
Ah, like the king.
A very much like the king who... It's startling what you hear about Elvis.
Yes.
He had a lot of trouble in that direction. But
because he was addicted to amphetamines and was systematically constipated.
That's it. And our mate Harry died in much the same way.
Mm.
Rawley, you've got a tale of thievery.
You were talking about Gina Rinehart buying half of Australia to run beef cattle.
Well, beef queen.
One of the people that are already in that business, Lawrence, is... a good friend of the programs, I imagine, Stuart Gull. Stuart Gull was a fearsome footballer for the Bloods.
That's right.
And no footballer deserved the name the Bloods more than Stuart, because he was a tough Ballarat boy who grew up doing it the hard way.
And what kind of livestock does he run, Stewie?
Well, he has Victoria's largest property, 20,000 acres at Skipton, called Bannon Gill Station. which has 20,000 sheep and
wow,
4,500 cattle and a lot of other stuff, and 7 acres of botanical gardens.
Lovely.
It's a lovely place.
He's done all right, very Stewie. Well.
And he's the man, of course, who dropped rotten Ronnie Andrews in a game, famously.
So he's not a man to be messed with.
Well, I think Ronnie elbowed him or something and said, what are you going to do about it? And Stewie went bang, bang, and no more talk from
and
Ronnie.
And what's happening out at Banning
well,
Hill Station?
Well, he got home. I think Stewie was disappointed after the Swans lost the grand final.
Yep.
And I think he got home to Banning Hill and found that some very cunning predator had backed a truck into the paddock, put up some temporary yards, got a couple of quiet dogs and taken away a whole truckload of sheep that are worth about $300 each
well,
at present. He's unhappy.
It's a great Australian tradition. Are we on the lookout for a swag man with a jumbuck in his tucker bag?
In his semi-trailer and several of them, many of them, dozens and hundreds. But my suggestion is don't be caught by Stewie Gull.
Yeah, but have we already eaten them in the way of chops, those sheep, or are they wool? Or
Yes, I think they'll be converted into meat.
Where was Stewie on grand final day?
I imagine he was
at the ground.
So do you think, they may have predicted that the great South Melbourne man would be at the MCG on grand final day, so opened up the wool shed.
I might be tampering with history here a bit, I'm not sure. But there's no doubt, he says, local knowledge counts for a lot, and whenever something's on somewhere and they know everybody's at something, things get pinched.
It happens
a lot. It's actually one of the things we don't talk about much, but there is so much big-scale theft in the country of livestock and other stuff. Yeah, really organised. I hardly know a farmer that hasn't lost a lot of stock.
And is grand final day a particularly busy day for theft? I mean, presumably the crooks know everyone's busy.
Yeah, anything that comes up that's got a... if you can predict that someone's going to be away at the races or away at the footy or whatever.
They at the Givenchy fashion show in Paris.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
Exactly. Same thing.
Slide on in.
Get your livestock indoors on Melbourne Cup Day.
Yeah, Kardashians have learnt the hard way. Don't be telling everybody where you are.
That's right.
But there you go. So, now I had one other story about not a stolen sheep, Lawrence, but a stolen telephone.
Okay.
This involves Chinese tourists who are very keen to go to places like Phillip Island and look at penguins. But sadly, they got a whole busload of Chinese tourists recently, and one of them realised that his phone had been stolen or was gone, and they set on the tracker device, and the tracker called the whole busload of tourists towards the stolen phone. So the busload of tourists turns up at the Gatwick Hotel in St Kilda, where the phone is. And where a very bemused St Kilda policeman advised them not to go in.
Give up on that phone. Well, Rulett, thank you for bringing us up to speed with those tales from around Victoria. We shall look forward to hearing from you next week.
Gentlemen, because I'm so pleased to see you and because Seb did such a good job the other day, I've just got a little gift for you, the new book, Shot at Close Range, which I don't see why only the usual residents of this studio should have this book. I think you should also have one each.
Very nice.
That's great. Well,
great idea for Christmas coming up.
Absolutely. Yes. Andrew Rule back with his old tag team partner, John Sylvester, there with another collection of tales. I look forward to sinking my teeth into that. John of the Scared Weird Little Guys is coming up very, very shortly on Triple M's Hot Breakfast with Seb Costello and Lawrence Mooney. And I'm told he's penned a tune that may involve us somehow.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Appeals to my megalomaniacal side. I want a song about me.
You would be a good Bond villain, actually, with your megalomaniacal side.
Welcome to Singapore, Mr. Bond. You'll never leave.
You would be there, and Rupert the dog would be sitting there, and you'd be stroking Rupert.
I'd be stroking, and then I'd say, kill him.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Rupert would fly through the air.
And then you'd say to your offsider, bring me another T-bone.
Do you intend to get information out of me? No, oh, no, Mr. Bond, I intend you to die.
Actually, and every Bond villain needs some sort of physical disability. And you've got lesions.
Oh, right. No, I've got my discoid eczema.
Oh, sorry, discoid eczema.
So I scratch that.
Lawrence has little round red circles all over his body.
Yeah, not all over. Thank you very much. Now, Daniel Craig has apparently...
Speaking of Bond.
...done a classic backflip.
Yeah, so...
like Bond would, straight in to the Aston Martin, and he's driving towards another contract.
He's popped a U-turn. Yeah, well, so we're speaking of Bond because Daniel Craig, who's done the last few Bond movies... amazingly well.
Name them.
Earlier, a Casino Royale into, and now I will always forget the one that
Quantum
happens.
Quantum of Solace.
Quantum of Solace into Skyfall into Spectre.
Yeah.
So he said that earlier this year that he would rather slit his wrists than play James Bond again.
Yeah, so he obviously had a bad day on the set.
Yep.
He's come off Make Your Bond. Maybe it's a very, you know, taxing experience. There's a lot of work to do. Or he might have been with a co-star that would just drove him crazy. And he wasn't thinking of going back to the franchise.
No, and it looked all but over. I remember the bookies over in the UK shortened the odds dramatically on the market for Tom Hiddleston, the actor from the Thor movies who plays Thor's brother Loki. They shortened the market on Tom Hiddleston to become the next Bond by a really significant margin. And I think he was seen also meeting with Barbara Broccoli and Michael Wilson, the producers of Bond.
And Tom Hiddleston, most famously, is the boyfriend of, or no longer the boyfriend of,
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift.
Yep.
So he's Mr. Taylor Swift.
Have they broken up, have they?
They have broken up. Sorry, mate.
I thought Taylor was into long-term relationships.
Yeah, I think that Tom walked. He might not have been feeling it.
Is that right? Well, anyway, where this all finishes is that Daniel Craig has reportedly done a backflip after the producers offered him $150 million Australia to do more James Bond movies.
I've warmed to Daniel Craig in the role. I thought Skyfall was no good.
Oh, get out.
No good.
Skyfall? You mean not Spectre, the latest one?
Spectre was good. Skyfall,
no good.
Oh, mate,
you have got no idea. Skyfall is one of the better films I've ever seen.
No, it just rang my implausibility bell.
Oh, mate.
How did he get out of the thing?
Have you ever seen visual beauty like there was in Skyfall? The fight scene among the high-rise towers of Singapore where the neon lights are playing with your depth perception and all sorts of things. Couple that with the final shot
of the death
where
of
a sorrowful James Bond is standing on the rafters of a building in London with dozens of Union Jacks fluttering in front of him as he says
London's
goodbye
been destroyed, of
to
course,
his
remember.
Beloved M.
Yeah.
Oh, mate, that is a great
way
film.
Way over the top. No.
Oh, hit us up on Twitter, at MMM Hot Breakfast. Was Skyfall better than Spectre?
I liked Spectre better.
Skyfall was so much better.
It was much more a traditional kind of a Bond film, Spectre. It knew its limitations. Skyfall, you know, that destruction of London. I liked the siege in the kind of like the country
that was
cottage.
Good. With Bond and his little butler at the Skyfall homestead.
Lots of innovation going on there. Lots of Home Alone type tricks. an homage too, but no, I'll pay Spectre. And favourite Bond film of all time before we keep moving on with, before you start weighing into Idris Elba as a non-option.
100% Skyfall is my favourite Bond.
What?
Yeah. I like my Roger Moore, but no, Skyfall, if I'm being honest, what about you?
I might go for You Only Live Twice.
Okay. You Only Live Twice, which is Sean Connery in Japan.
Yeah, the crater.
For most of it.
Yeah, you know.
If you were offered $100 million, $150 million, would you go back to postcards?
I am. Well, yes, I would. But I'd also slit my wrists.
This is pretty cool. The Scared Weird Little Guys have been a part of our lives for many years. They did disband recently, which was disappointing to lots of people. But joining us is one half of John and Rusty. Morning, John.
Good morning, Seb, and good morning, Loz. Great to see you both.
Nice to see you too. Great news that the Scared Weird Little Guys are getting back one more time. Broke up in 2011, back together 2016, on the 16th of October.
That's this coming Sunday night.
And what will you be doing?
Well, look, I should preface this by saying that I'm running a community music festival called the Surrey Hills Music Festival in Melbourne's eastern suburbs. And it was my brainwave to put together a bit of a comedy night to help support the festival. So this is what it's all about. And Scaredies are coming back, and I have a little bit of influence with that group. So I decided to reform.
When Rusty isn't running marathons in Antarctica or writing a book.
That's why he's not here, Loz. Right. He's in Chicago running a marathon as we speak.
Oh, is he? Goodness me. So he may have been watching the presidential debate. Did you get a look at that, John?
I did have a look at it. I don't know if you guys have touched on it, but did you see the fly on Hillary's face?
No.
There was a fly landed right on her face. And
did she flinch?
She didn't even react or even wave it away.
Really?
It was a momentary thing where it alighted on her sort of inner eyebrow and then it was gone again. And of course, social media went nuts on it. Yeah.
It's not exactly a butterfly on your shoulder, though, is it? It's a blowy on your face.
It was a big one, too, you know. It was probably the size of her pupil. Yeah. So,
and were people reading things into it?
Of course. The far right is saying, it's a sign from the netherworld that she's touched by the, you know, Satan or whatever.
You can guarantee it'll have its own Twitter account by the end of the day.
It already does. Has a handle. Yeah, I don't know what you call that these days. Twitter, you know, it's all very modern.
That's
yeah.
Very, very hashtag.
Yeah, very hashtag.
And mate, you've been putting together a little bit of music for this morning?
I knew I was coming on this morning. Scaredy's typically on Triple M would write a song to come on Triple E music.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I thought, let's keep the tradition going.
Fantastic.
So in honour of you guys being on here on the Hot Breakfast, here's a little thing for you.
Oh, great. Oh, great. Yep.
The Hot Breakfast never tasted so great. I think Mick, Ed and Darcy should just stay away. The Moon Man, he's such a funny guy. I don't know much about Seb, I don't know why.
Fair enough.
But Melbourne likes you, and they don't like everyone. And maybe your radio careers have just begun.
Yeah, well, yeah.
But like a fly on the president's face, you can see what's going on. And like an aging doggies fan, you've started Melbourne's heart again. But if you like the way this T-bone tastes, well, you should go and live by yourself. And if you like your breakfast hot like this, well, you should go live by yourself.
Yeah.
And that's all I had time
for.
Yeah, I like
it. Yeah, good, you guys. That was funny to come on and do a song like that.
That's very nice. And I got my juicy T-bone in there, too.
I'm wanting a T-bone.
It was all
right
in there.
That's so good at all. So the Surry Hills Music Festival, is it just the Scaredies?
On this show on Sunday, the Scaredies are with Geraldine Quinn, Toby Halligan, and Andrew McClelland.
What a lineup!
In support, it's a great lineup. We couldn't afford you, Lozzer.
But Hawthorne Arts Centre, 360 Burwood Road.
They just
Hawthorne.
Redone that, I reckon. The courtyard out the front there looks great.
It's beautiful there. We're in the chandelier room. It's going to be a great night. So 7 PM on Sunday night, but tickets through hawthornartscentre.com.au.
Magnificent. Never stumbled past there as you left the Hawthorne Hotel, Moo Man, to go down to the Glen Ferry?
Yes.
Well, when you're stumbling this Sunday, stop in at the art centre. Right. Have a giggle.
Go see the guys.
Maybe play one, I know.
It is on Sunday at 7 PM, Hawthorne Arts Centre. Great to see you, John.
Thank you, Seb.
Nice to see you, John.
That's the end of it for today, Moo Man.
Okay, we'll see you tomorrow, Seb.
Look forward to it.
Across Melbourne. This is Breakfast with Seb Costello and Lawrence Mooney on Triple M.
Triple M rocks Melbourne.